Hi, we're back. We being Speak Up Las Cruces, co-hosts Walt Rubel and Peter Goodman, and a whole rock band of other people who know more than we do. And we also invite you to call in at 526-5825. The subject is Project Jupiter. Some of you know about it. Most of you do. Those who don't will soon learn. But it's a large AI data center project campus that is proposed to be built down in or near Santa Teresa. The county commission is taking a vote on it Friday. It's very controversial. We have with us two county commissioners, Shannon Reynolds and Manny Sanchez. We also have, I think they're both engineers of some sort, Phil Simpson and Bob Hearn, and we have State Representative Michaela Lara Cadena in studio, and you're invited to call in. Don't call in the first, 5 or 10 minutes, because we're going to give these folks a chance to kind of introduce themselves. But let me ask one of the county commissioners. We repeatedly invited the proposers of this, the company, and also the county's economic director, development director, whatever she is. Didn't get any response from her. I really didn't get any from the company in terms of, yeah, we'll send somebody, or no, we won't. But we sure appreciate you guys being here. Let's have one of you tell folks, and then some of these people will not have heard of Project Jupiter, but briefly say why you think this is a thing the county should consider.
Doesn't matter to me.
No, I mean, I don't mind. I mean,
whichever she's talking, be near the mic.
Yeah. So,
well, let me say for folks, we have a lot more people than microphones. So if we are in some disorder, it's because I'm a nutcase and invited too many people. But they're all wonderful.
Yeah. So Project Jupiter, I think, like you had said, Peter, is a project for an AI data center in the Santa Teresa industrial area. Part of the commitments that we've seen so far, and if people want to find out a little bit more, they can go to the Doniana County website and look at our agenda that has all of the information for the IRBs, the memorandum of understanding that the county's working through. And then also, that has some additional information there. There's some of these commitments that they're talking about. But some of that is it's really around job creation. And then some of the financial commitments that we're looking at. They're looking at about 2,500 jobs to be created during the construction phase, which would be for the first 2 to 3 years. And then after that, we'd be looking at about 750 permanent jobs here locally after construction, and they get into operation phase. So you've got that. The county's been working hard to secure commitments, financial commitments, probably one of the biggest ones that we've seen, on top of what we call our PILT or pilot, the payment in lieu of taxes, which will add up to $360 million over 30 years, will be a $50 million commitment from the company, which will be used specifically for water and wastewater infrastructure. And then there's other pieces of that, of those commitments that will help Doniana Community College, NMSU, LCPS, et cetera. So I think there's a lot of potential benefits that could come out of this financially for the county and the residents.
Thank you, Manny. Let me start with Phil Simpson. What's wrong with that?
Well, my biggest issue... My biggest issue is not with the data center itself. It's with the power plant required to run that data center, and the lack of information that's been put forth regarding that power plant. We don't know how much water it's going to use, because we don't know exactly what kind of gas turbines will be used. They've put out a little bit of information, but not any hard data. And if we compare it to the most water frugal El Paso Electric plant, which are the Montana Power Station plants, the most modern plants they have, the data center would use about 15 times more, the power plant for the data center would use 15 times more water than the facility itself. So the figures that are released for the facility don't tell the whole picture. We need to know what that power plant looks like because it's going to use a lot of water.
What about the power itself and using gas in a time when some of us at least are a little bit worried about climate craziness?
Well, that's a huge issue for me, and that's probably a bigger issue than water because I don't think that one can be mitigated by the type of power plant. If it's a gas power plant, it's going to output huge amounts of carbon dioxide.
Can you size it for us in terms of compared to a – or Bob, if you – one of you guys size it, how's it compare to, you know, Sunland Park or whatever?
Well, the easiest way for me to think about it is it will put out more carbon dioxide annually than all of El Paso Electric's plants in New Mexico and Texas.
Okay. That's pretty huge. Manny or Shannon, how much does that give you pause for thought about voting for this thing?
I'm not a power guy, but I'm more of an IT and data guy. But, you know, we've talked about a lot of other things besides just the gas power plant to provide the energy. And matter of fact, in talking to some of our other partners, like Trane, for instance, they have a mechanism they've been using, or technology they've been using down at El Paso Community College, that actually has cut their consumption by 15 to 20%. And that's just one method that they're considering to use here, which is to actually use the chillers to create ice at night and then allow that ice to actually melt down through the system.
Well, in terms of power, sorry to interrupt, but in terms of power, he's saying, and I've seen others say it, it boggles my mind that it could equal El Paso Electric's whole output, but it is a huge gas-powered power thing, grid, at a time when we're talking about climate change. And even if you cut that down from what it is, cut it by 20%, cut it by 30%, cut it by 40%, it's still doubling what this area puts out in terms of carbon dioxide, if I understand correctly. Doesn't that give you pause for thought?
Peter, as I was saying, there's a lot of technology in addition to the gas power plant they're planning to use to try to drop a lot of those emissions. And how successful we're going to be is going to be dependent on a lot of different technologies. I mean, geothermal, gas, running the chillers, solar, all those mechanisms and even are going to be used in order to try to mitigate some of the use
of
gas.
Is the county requiring in the contract with these people that they use 50% renewable or 60 or do that within a certain is there anything other than, yeah, we'll do it sometime in terms of contractual requirements?
I don't know that there's anything that specifically says that, but go ahead, man. You've probably been on this part better than me.
So what we've seen is in the MOU, they are going to be compliant to the ETA's 2045 goal. And so, you know, that will be, and they've, as the company had said, it'll be a portfolio mix. I did want to point out, and I know I've mentioned this to Phil, is that the numbers he's using for the water, I know you're talking about carbon dioxide, mm-hmm. but I want to address a couple things, because I've seen a couple of articles, op-eds that have come out, you, Peter, being one of them, and the other one was a former PRC commissioner, Steve Fishman, that has put out just blatant, just, you know, I feel are just lies.
What did I?
This weekend you said, or even suggested, the fact that the county commission may have violated the Open Meetings Act. There's no evidence to that. And for you to plant seeds of distrust, I think, is just wrong, because you have no evidence of that. Former PRC Commissioner Fishman.
Well, let me throw in, I do have some evidence. It may not be conclusive to win in court, but just the fact that one of your commissioners hadn't seen some things, and the fact that, you know, at the time before you voted the initial vote, you had seen documents that were marked secret and weren't given to the public and, you know, weren't.
I don't know where you, like you say there was things marked secret. I would say I don't know where that came from, because none of that happened. So, but if well, if you don't have a case,
gave me one.
I have one.
Yeah, I mean, they existed. Now, the time I don't want to get sidetracked.
But I'll go back to the...
We can have a further discussion. I'm not alleging you guys violated it, but I think if I were in charge of investigating that kind of thing, there's evidence that would, I'd be interested in.
So, let me get back to what even former PRC Commissioner Steve Fishman said, which is around water usage. Taking a comparison, just because it's a gas turbine does not mean all gas turbines use water. The Montana units use water because they are dual fuel units. They use diesel and they use water to mitigate emissions. This plant is not going to be, as far as I can tell, and what we've seen across the region is that they use simple cycle gas turbines. So when you do that, there is no water in an inlet to use. There's no water for emissions mitigation. There's no water for a combined cycle. So water usage is really a non-factor. They don't use significant amounts of water, as former PRC commissioner had mentioned. And also, I think, as Phil has mentioned here. The other part is that you look at the emissions level, and yes, there is going to be an increase in CO2 limits. I think the portfolio that EPE has is about, I can't remember if it was 2.2 or 2.8 gigawatts of power. And what they did to reduce their carbon limits or their carbon production was they actually exited from coal completely. And so they've gone to a portfolio of gas, solar, and nuclear. The reason I just bring that up is because when you look at what the state will look at, they're going to be looking at NOx levels and CO levels. They don't look specifically at CO2 when we look at air quality. And when you look at air quality measures, they look at PM2.5, PM10, ozone, NOx, and CO, because those are the hazardous gases to us as humans. It's not CO2. And I know there's a discussion about greenhouse gases being CO2, but if you notice the name of the legislation, the Energy Transition Act, it's a transition. It's not saying we need to absolutely go 100% non-gas now. We get there, and that's part of this commitment with the Memorandum of Understanding.
Let me ask you a question about the ETA, and then I want to, Phil understands what you said and can either agree or disagree. I'm too much of an idiot. But the ETA is saying we're really poisoning the world with this, non-renewable fuel, and we need to get off it. And so it's about getting – you're going from using a lot to going using none. And you're saying, well, these guys are going to start using a bunch now, and then they'll stop by 2045. If it were different, if it weren't climate change, if it were that we were doing something that we needed to do for our society, but it killed 10% of the babies that got born in the county, you wouldn't say, well, let's start, you could start doing as much as we do, and then you could stop in 20 years. So I think that's right or wrong, whether the whole project is right or wrong. I think the ETA, it'll comply with the ETA. If the ETA were saying we're going to stop killing so many people in 20 years, you wouldn't allow somebody to start killing people and then stop.
Well, I think that's a little of an extreme, Peter. Come on, really, this is, you're going to say about killing babies? I mean, if it was something like that, we would outlaw it, right? But it's not that case. So you want to take an extreme.
It's not far from that case in terms of how the world's going to be for people, but I don't want to get an aside.
And we've got other voices that we need to get in here as well. Bob, why don't you jump in?
On the power plant, I agree with Phil that this is the part of the program that needs to be looked at the most carefully. We've focused, and largely in the public meetings, due to the presentations that have been made, almost exclusively on issues with the center itself. The company has been loath to discuss this generator. No other big center like this in the country, existing, under construction, or planned, is going to generate all of its own power. This will be the largest power generation station in the country. The largest one right now is the Palo Verde Nuclear Plant south of Phoenix. Its maximum capacity is 3.3 gigawatts. Jupiter says they're going to max this thing out at 3 to 5 gigawatts. They're just the largest plant in the country, in the country's history, is going to be right there. Who knows how to do that? Nobody's ever done it before. It's not something that people do when they build these things. If they were going to provide this power with solar, it would take about 25,000 acres of solar panels for 1 gigawatt around the clock, with another 1,000 acres of batteries. Yes.
No, sir. I will say you can look at California. The CEC in California just approved a 1 gigawatt solar farm to be constructed that's over 10,000 acres. It will also include a gigawatt of battery storage. So the claim that it's 25,000 acres is not true. Not with today's technology.
A gigawatt solar capability will not power a gigawatt facility around the clock. It will provide a gigawatt during the day. There has to be another gigawatt to charge the batteries to run during the night. There has to be extra gigawatts to supply when days are cloudy. It gets big. It gets big fast. So the whole thing is a risk. The company is still saying, as Shannon and many have said, well, we might do it this way. Well, we might do it that way. Well, the company has said we're going to be in operation by 2026 even, or 2028. They can't possibly meet that schedule if they don't know today exactly what they're going to do and have stuff on order.
Vince Gutchick was also another knowledgeable person, unlike me. What's your view on this?
Thank you, Peter, and listeners. I've been on climate change research for decades. All right. Number of things. First of all, if you do dry cooling on a turbine, you reduce the thermodynamic efficiency.
That's right.
So you go to 33% efficiency instead of 40. Yes, you do.
We have one county commissioner shaking his head yes and the other no.
I know this stuff. That's my job.
I'm sorry, sir. That's my job, is to know about gas turbine technology myself. That's what I do for a living, sir. So the newer gas turbines, while older gas turbines, absolutely, I would agree with you. But the current turbines that are in production have higher efficiency ratings.
They do, but it's not as high as if you have cooling. Anyway, that's a side issue. A lot of the stuff has been about water, and that's nice because you can deflect a lot of that. Great. The CO2 emissions are enormous. It does kill people worldwide. We are past the 1.5 degrees Celsius global warming. We're getting heat waves. We're getting floods. We're getting droughts for various reasons. People die from that. It is a very serious world health issue. And we're talking about tripling at least the CO2 emissions from the EPE area, because EPE now, it serves a little over 2 gigawatts, all right? But more than half of that, slightly more than half of that, is non-carbon emitting, Palo Verde, and solar panels. Okay, if you do it all with gas and you do roughly 4 gigawatts, you're going to have more than triple the original emissions. That's a very serious thing. And I can go into other things. So I think CO2 is a killer. Worse is job killing by AI. 20% of jobs worldwide might disappear from AI.
That's probably beyond. Well, let's let Manny respond. I want to hear from Representative Cadena in a moment, but what he's saying about the CO2 emissions being really huge with this compared to what we do now, what do you think about that?
Like I said, it's, to me, I think, and you know, I think Bob had said the same thing. You need, look, the technology that exists in power generation today is not made to be able to provide 100% renewable now, which is why the ETA allows for transition, and it has different milestones along the way, but the ultimate goal is 2045 to be 100% carbon neutral. Now, we need gas. That's just the plain and simple of it. But you know what I mean? Like I said, what we've seen is that overall, our carbon footprint has decreased significantly here in the state of New Mexico.
And now we're going to reverse it. We're going to reverse the Well, what about this? What about the county commission saying, requiring them, and it's a contract, 50% renewable right from the start and eventually none in 2045? Could do that. It would be good for the environment.
You know, Peter, I think we could say we could try to do that, but again, this is a combination of a lot of different technologies that they're planning, that they're actually in plans to put use. And the challenge is that in initial construction, they're not going to have all of those items actually done because part of the construction is to build those. So for some period of time, we will be probably solely dependent on gas during construction at least.
We have a caller. I want to hear from Representative Cadena first. What's your take on all
this?
Hi.
Good morning, everybody. This is Micaela, State Representative Lara Cadena. I certainly appreciate the depth of expertise around the table, but I'm here to talk about process and policy and my expectations about how government should work in a transparent and open way and in a way that benefits the public good. So generally, if we have time, I'd like to talk on 3 points or get a better understanding on 3 points. I'd like to hear from the commissioners about the potential impact of this IRB proposal on state revenue and our local school districts. I'd also like to better understand how you all got to the $360 million figure, specifically who was part of those negotiations, what that entailed. And then finally, I've been concerned and have heard from all sorts of constituents day and night about the reliance the county seems to be using on information provided by these massive corporate entities. I haven't seen any documentation or evidence that offers independent analysis or review of these proposals, and I'd like to hear like how that's happened. So I don't know where you want to start, Peter, but that's sort of what I'd like to cover today.
Let's take the third of those first. What have you folks done in terms of your independent expertise or independent investigation into the things these folks say? Let me preface that by saying I'm not saying they're lying. I'm not saying they're telling. I have no basis to know one way or the other.
This is, you know, I think when you look at, for me, it's been reviewing the information that's been given to us and doing research on it to understand better, is this feasible? Is this, is this something that's verifiable? And that's been for me. Now, you know, there's a lot of information that people want to know. They want to know site plans. They want to know. There was, I think, already an initial environmental assessment that was done. But, you know, people, like we say, this is a process. Mm-hmm. We're in step one. People want to know already in step one what the answers are going to be in step seven and step eight, when that goes through permitting, that goes through the state process for air permits. So, you know what I mean? This is, I get the understanding of wanting to verify information, but that information gets reviewed and verified during the permitting process. There is a process and it's very deliberate. It's not like we approve this, there's going to be shovels in the ground the day after. I think that's what we need to understand, is that, you know, this is a process that we look at and have to allow those checks and balances to occur.
We are at the top of the hour, so I just have to break in real quickly and say that you're listening to KTAL LP 101.5 FM in Las Cruces, and we are having a very lively discussion with a whole lot of people about Project Jupiter. Go ahead.
Just as an example, I was on an email thread yesterday with Commissioner Gamera. When she was asked questions, she sent a website and a fact sheet called protectjupitertogether.com. As far as I understand, the payer for that is these corporate entities and their subsidiaries. And those, as far as I know, are not answers that the county crafted. So again, I've not seen anything else. I am curious, has the county retained bond counsel? Like, who is working on this? And who is your counsel, if you're nodding your head yes?
Our bond counsel is actually out of Albuquerque, and we've been working with them since we started the project. And once we decided that an industrial revenue bond was the mechanism we were planning to use, we secured counsel and they've been very helpful, actually.
Who is bound? Who is the bond counsel?
You know what? Since I haven't talked to them, I don't remember. You remember the name?
Remember, no. Modrell,
I got the name yesterday, but I don't remember.
I thought Rody. I believe Rody is their the Project Jupiter their counsel. I wish I could remember.
They are. That's correct.
Okay. Yeah, I don't remember ours, but we do have bond counsel that's helped us with this as well as some of the other bonds that we've worked on.
So just to clarify, and I've spoken to people who've been involved in securing IRBs across the state over decades. And of course, as we know, something of this magnitude has not ever been considered or anything close to it. But one estimate I was given is that when some of these efforts are being developed and on the state side, which I know this is a different consideration, but when these go to Board of Finance on the state side, sometimes they have, it's typical to have 400 hours plus of independent economic analysis. So nobody is taking, even at stage one, for granted what it is the project supposes to deliver on. So it is concerning to me that I haven't heard any examples of any independent analysis besides what the company has provided and what the commissioners are using as answers to our questions. Again, what these gigantic corporate entities say that their promises are.
Excuse me for a second, but I'm confused about what financial discussions are you expecting? Because, I mean, we've done about 20 industrial revenue bonds, and you're right, this is the largest we've done since I've been in office. But it's certainly not, the process is pretty much the same. Before we start dealing with construction and permits and all that, we first determine whether or not the financing is going to be available. So far in the first phase, the initial revenue bond issuance or discussion or passing is determining whether the project is actually going to be financed. Once that's done, then we go into the detailed determination of exactly how they're going to construct everything, get the permits, make sure NMED is involved. I mean, this is actually the same process we've always used with these. It's the same process we've always used. It's just because it's large and it's getting public attention, it's getting more scrutiny. Yeah. But it's not any different than anything we've done before.
Mike, I want a clarification. When you say how it's going to be funded, does that mean by the industrial revenue bonds, or does that mean who's going to actually put up money to do it? Because I don't think we know that yet.
Actually, the way industrial revenue bonds work is that we first determine that mechanism we're going to use along with like LEDA funds. And then according to LEDA, there's a lot of clawbacks about how they're going to employ people, how many people they're going to employ, you know, where they're going to be hired and how they're going to be trained and things like that. When it comes to the industrial revenue bonds, the process is basically we work with an organization, whether it's usually a private company, and when they say that they want to use industrial revenue bonds, then we determine what kind of tax benefits we can give them in order to help them with that. And then once that's done, then they start to bring to us actual details of what the process is that they're going to use. We've actually gotten a lot more information about what they plan to do in this process than we normally get with an industrial revenue bond. So
I would hope so. You guys are scheduled to vote on this Friday. The city of Sunland Park has voted unanimously to ask you to delay that vote. You have said, Commissioner Sanchez, we talked to you last week on this, seemed to suggest that there was something in the regulation of the IRB that required you to move this quickly. Is that what you were saying? And if not, why, given the you keep saying, well, we've done IRBs before. Yes, you have, but you cannot compare this to a canning factory or, you know, whatever your last night. This is massively on a different scale. My question is there a requirement that you have to get this done by Friday?
Well, first thing, the industrial revenue bond process has been the same as the others. There's nothing really different than when the process goes, and the process is well-defined, both in state statute and also in our local ordinances. So the process we're using in order to determine whether to issue industrial revenue bonds has not changed. Plus, none of the costs for the industrial revenue bonds is going to come from any of the taxes or the citizens or anything.
And when there is a cost.
Hold on.
We are giving up billions of dollars of tax revenue with an IRB like this.
And get to the Friday deadline, if you would. Are you required to do this by Friday?
Let me address what Representative Cadena has said. Okay. It's true that we are defraying some of the taxes. That's true. Okay. But also, if we don't have a project, we have no taxes. So when we want to talk about the money that's already in the county, we're not using county money actually to fund the project, they're going to be using money that they would have given us already. I mean, for taxes, and you're right. Now, we have, that's why the PILT's there. This is the first project that I've done when we've had PILT associated with it, and PILT, the payment in lieu of taxes. And the other IRBs, we've had none of that. But the agreements were, you know, we're going to defray this much taxes over 20 years, 20, 25, 30 years, and then basically at that time you start paying taxes, but there was no discussion about giving us money outside of the project like that. This is one where we recognize there's money that needs to be done. We're allocating a couple million dollars a year for the schools, okay, and which they wouldn't even have at all if we didn't have the project. We're allocating money for the Boys and Girls Club. We're allocating money for the tech centers for high schools.
I'll try one more time. Why do you have to get this done by Friday?
I mean, the short answer is when we publicized it, or when we approved publication, it said it would be heard on a specific date. So it has to be on the agenda on that date for the public to come and talk about. And I think that's what it comes down to.
Will you vote to delay it? To post, you know, could you have that hearing and the public, and then decide we're going to rehear this in 2 weeks or whatever?
Sorry, but we've had I think at least 7 or 8 public hearings on this already.
To be clear, were those your hearings or were those Jupiter's hearings?
They were a combination of both.
No, they weren't.
I'm sorry, we weren't there?
The county did not put on those meetings, just to be clear. The county has not engaged.
Jupiter put them on random. Okay. Yes, you participated.
There was one county.
The ones I participated in, actually, I asked to have them at my centers, and I was there in order to, if necessary, to say something. Now, if you're saying, did the county stand up and answer the questions? No, because the people that were talking about the project and get best party knowledge were actually the Jupiter team. But were we the ones that actually scheduled them? Did we have them at the centers? Did we actually encourage, had our representatives there? Yes, we did. So I can't see, how can you say it was their meetings and not a combination of both meetings?
They weren't county meetings with agendas or public engagement.
And I think, real quick, if you don't mind, I just want to jump in. And Representative Galena, just so you know, Mondrell Sperling is our bond counsel.
Okay. Certainly. And I just, again, to follow up, if I might quickly, I'm still curious about how somebody agreed to the $300 million figure. And back to the Open Meetings Act question, if the first you all were hearing of this on Monday and the first time you had to review agreements was on Monday, who came to the $300 million figure? Who was literally at the table in those negotiations?
It's my understanding that, it wasn't the county commissioners, I can tell you that. It was actually the staff that we pay at the county that's responsible for sitting and getting all this stuff together, along with our bond counsel, by the way, they were involved in the discussion as well, to actually come up with the numbers that we're going to be using. So, no, the county commissioners were not part of that discussion. We were actually given that option, and we talked about other options with our staff, and this is what we came to.
Our caller's been waiting patiently. Can you briefly make your... Are you there, first of all, caller, and can you briefly ask a question or make your comment?
I'm going to make my comment. I'm going to try to make it as quick as I can. This is Yoli Diaz, and good morning, everyone. It's great to listen to this. My comment is, I am skeptical of promises made today. Who will remember and enforce obligations tomorrow, especially if contractual obligations are not met? There is a concern of taxes empowering Project Jupiter. I compare this opportunity to the lease and asset purchase agreement of the hospital for 40 years when a well-financed corporation leased it with an APA. In my opinion, a decade ago, when promises were broken by Memorial Medical Center, contractual promises many, many people knew, including government management, as per IPRA documents. They didn't address the issues, they allowed them. There wasn't a roar in the community that I have found, and I haven't found a public disclosure of the issues up to the extensive efforts I've made since 2021. There are still issues today, although there are solutions, and I'm still working on getting needed action. Commissioners change. Who will remember and enforce obligations tomorrow?
Thank you, Yoli.
Thank you.
Thank you. How much are, I mean, this has been a concern of mine, too. We're not seeing contractual commitments. We're seeing we're going to do this, we're interested, we're committed, whatever, in their statements. Are you you know, is the county getting these things in promises, in contractually binding promises that can be enforced?
Yeah. So I think when you look at the MOU, the IRB specifically, there is some obligations in there. And there's even clawback clauses in there as well that allow us to get back that lost property or the tax revenue should they fail within that given time frame. You'll also see within LEDA funding the LEDA grants that we're looking at, that also has additional guarantees and milestones that they have to meet and clawbacks. So, you know, some of that is in the IRB. Some of that is in the LEDA, and then some of that would be that's not in either one of those would be within the MOU that's being signed as part of it. So, like I said, we're trying to figure out how we get use the right tools to be able to get some of that.
But we don't have any contractual agreement enforceable as far as the use of energy.
There's not anything yet. Well, that's within the MOU. They said that they will be carbon neutral by 2045.
Yeah. I don't want to give you my silly example again, but 20.
Okay.
On that point, I just want to share quickly that I was approached last week by an environmental advocate, works for a national organization. They're only New Mexico-based staff. And they were talking to me about negotiations they were part of during the legislative session in Santa Fe, in Chair Small's office. I think maybe Representative Silva was part of that too. Hosseman keeps writing that his spouse was part of negotiations. And at that time, what's been shared with me is that legislators didn't have any leadership from down here. They didn't have Empowerment Congress. They didn't have these kind of experts that call our community home. But they were negotiating with national nonprofits, with Sierra Club, Western Resource Advocates, to make sure they didn't come out in opposition on the energy piece to that. I think someone approached me because they felt guilty about it. But again, here we have no contractual agreements on energy. No local leadership was consulted, as far as I can tell, but we had legislators making deals in the dark during the session. Like, was that something you all were part of? Like, why is Tammy Feeblehorn, an Albuquerque city councilor, in the room negotiating on Project Jupiter? That is not in their backyard. It is in ours.
I can't speak for the legislators, but I think you did vote for the microgrid bill. Did you not, Representative?
I did assume that our local governments would vet these projects appropriately. As I've said before, I voted for water bills. I support brackish treatment and produced water even, because I know that in our future we have more water rights than real water. So I believe that we should have actual conversations about all of these possibilities. But my belief as a public official is that we do so in the service of our communities, of our existence, of our future, not at the hands of an unnamed end client to rule the world with AI.
And I'm saying, the point that this was done for negotiation for one specific person, I can't say that because that's within the legislature. As far as I know, the county government was not involved with that.
No.
With the things I can say specifically we were up there advocating for was for funding for a desalination plant that is in process and being worked on, because we are trying to take care of our residents. We know water is a precious resource, and those are some of the things we worked on. I'm just trying to point out simply that, you know, people like to say that, you know, that there's concerns with what was allowed or what will be allowed, but it's within the bills and the policies that were passed through the legislature. And like I said, I think that's one of the things, is trying to say that county government is not vetting this. But you know, we're following the laws that were passed in Santa Fe.
Well, I think what she's saying is the law was passed to allow you to
exactly.
do things, but you were not supposed to turn off your brains in the process. You were supposed to think about. Sorry, and by the way, let me say this: I love these guys, the commissioners
and
we're talking to,
and
I, you know, they are good guys. But I sure disagree. I sure have questions about this.
You started this show by saying that you and I don't have a dog in this fight.
things like the ETA thing that we're gonna let somebody start doing. If I said, if I legally could start a factory just north of Hatch. And I said, it's going to use gas. You know, I have my own gas-fired power, and it's going to equal the amount that El Paso Electric puts out in our whole area. And by 2045, I'll stop. Would you think that was fine? Would you think that was wise, good for the environment?
I think it becomes weighing the pros and cons, right? I mean, this is not, and I don't want to be speaking for Commissioner Reynolds here, but I think, you know, we're trying to, you have to balance this decision, right? I think that's what we have to do and take into consideration. What is it that we're considering? What is the what could be the negative? I would agree, you know, having additional greenhouse gases into the environment is not the direction we necessarily want to go. But, you know, we look at what controls there are in place in terms of the air permits that are provided by NMED, the jobs that will allow us to give our residents, hopefully an improved quality of life. And I think in this case, you know, for us, I'd be remiss to say that $50 million to potentially help with water infrastructure would not help that southern part of the community.
Can I talk to the cost benefit analysis? It's very difficult to talk about the cost benefit analysis, but I did some this morning, the only way I could think of to do it is to use the EPA's 2025 figure for social cost of carbon. You know, that's the theoretically appropriate value to use when conducting benefit cost analysis that affect greenhouse gas emissions. It includes the medical costs, the costs of flooding, environmental disasters, things like that. But it's $130 per metric ton of carbon. If you calculate the impact, that adds up to over 8 years of the natural gas 700 megawatt plant operating, $2.8 billion of environmental and social impact to us, $2.8 billion. That's a lot more than the expected $360 million economic benefit over 10 years. So that's, to me, that's the easiest way to think about it. The other thing I'd just like to mention real quick, we talked about this session this year and some backroom negotiations that resulted in exceptions for natural gas in the microgrid bill. Mm-hmm. What I would advocate is that we don't rely on those exemptions that were written in this year by Project Jupiter. Let's hold Project Jupiter to the renewable portfolio standards for New Mexico, which is 50% in 2025 and growing over time. And that is not that expensive to do with solar plus battery. You can have solar plus battery, and then it furnishes your power during the day and the evening. And then at night, you can either rely on El Paso Electric, who has extra capacity at night, or you can have some natural gas generation. But let's meet the ETA requirements that were passed in 2019 without these carve-outs.
Bob, go ahead.
Thanks. There's a number of issues about this project that we should be discussing, I think. One of them is we've got talking about $360 million, and we have to hire people that are going to make a certain amount of money. None of that is indexed to inflation. This is a 30-year deal. In 30 years, a dollar is going to be worth less than 50 cents. We got to peg that so that they remain constant in value. IRB process that's going on right now, the county has not followed its own rules. They have accepted an application from the applicant that is absolutely not complete. It lacks a ton of information about the company, their funding, and it does not have an environmental assessment. The form that you fill out when you do an application requires these things. It doesn't say if you feel like it. It says put the environmental assessment right here. I have an answer back from the county to an IPRA that says, when I asked about did I miss something, I didn't get the environmental assessment, they said, no, there is none, and there will not be one. until after the IRB is decided. That's a crucial piece of information that requires that the applicant go through the answers to a lot of the questions that we're debating here this morning. In addition, there have been big IRBs like this done around the country. There's a lot of background and experience about problems that they can be. If you'll note in this one, the parent company, which has suddenly changed from Borderplex Digital to Yucca or something, proposes to break the whole project up into 8 sub-companies. Mm-hmm. That's a standard process that's used in order to isolate different parts of the project. So if one goes bad, it doesn't take everybody else down. And as long as things work well, that's fine. But when they don't work well, it's a mess. It's been experienced in other places in the country, and there are ways that have been worked out to protect the county from the mess that's liable to happen if this starts to go bad. That none of that has been put into the agreements. None of it has been looked at. It's out. It's available. It can be used. The excuse me. This whole situation is technically going to be obsolete in 10 years. We're doing a 30-year program on basically 5-year technology. I've been building things that we now call data centers that started out as server rooms since the 70s. And we've progressed in about every 10 years due to network technology and other kinds of technology. We step up to bigger and bigger things. Right now there's an enormous data center in Las Lunas that Meta has, but it's not this kind of data center. It runs Facebook. It runs Instagram, WhatsApp, and a lot of Meta business stuff, and it'll be there forever without having to refresh. But these AI hyperscale things are brand new technology, and they're going to be over and done with in 10 years. I think in 10 years there won't be anybody even using this thing if it gets built. So we've got to plan ahead for that kind of thing. This is not refreshing the insides, like they've said. This is like it's when people aren't going to be doing this.
We got to let the commissioners respond to the
why?
Allegations on the.
Let us talk.
They're
taking up time without saying anything.
I did want to say, you know, Bob, and Bob's right. I think, you know, where he mentioned about technology being advancing, and I think I don't know if they said this at the meeting you attended, but part of the reason why the IRB is so big is because they're planning for these refreshes.
It's worse than that.
Every 10 years, they're planning to refresh. So the initial build, 10 years in, and
it's
then
every 3 years,
if
you do that, but it doesn't save the whole thing.
What about the issue of not doing the required studies? That I think that's the, to me, that's the bigger issue.
Thank you, Bob, and also Walt. I asked that same, after I was asked that question by one of these guys or some other people, I went back to our county manager and our county staff and said, are we missing this? And just like you saying, are we missing this environmental study? And what they said is they reached out to our bond people that we have in Albuquerque, our lawyers there, and they said, in fact, that it's not actually required. And now, I know that's not what Bob is saying. I haven't actually studied it myself, but they said based on what our lawyers are saying, that can be done in the next phase of the project. Okay, and it's not part of the IRB. Not absolutely needed as part of the IRB approval.
Okay.
But in fact, it's on the county application. You're just not moving forward.
No,
so you are deviating from your IRB.
Please get on a microphone.
I'm saying if it's a legal issue, our legal team is responsible for it.
I'm familiar with Mondral Sperting. They're among the best in the state. But earlier you said that you are following your standard IRB process, and it appears that the environmental assessment is on the IRB application for Doñana County. But this time your high-powered lawyers, and they are quite good, said legally you don't actually have to require that. So you've elected not to have it part of this public process or to even see it yourselves before taking this vote.
I can tell you in the IRBs that I've been part of approving in the last 7 years, I don't remember there being an environmental assessment done before we approved the funding.
You keep falling back on that nonsense about past IRBs. I'm talking about the county's IRB application. In Section 6, it says, put your environmental assessment here.
And
if you don't
that.
Put
our
it
lawyers,
here,
our lawyers have told us that that's not necessary on this one.
You haven't addressed it. You haven't addressed it anywhere. You haven't addressed it.
There's a bigger question here, whether you should, you know, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Okay. Does it make sense to go forward with something this big without having an environmental study done?
It will be done. It's just not. It's not done as part of the financing.
We still haven't addressed why the hurry.
Why what?
Why the hurry? Why the hurry?
Right. You know, when we look at the IRB process, we're actually following the IRB process, which is to publish and then 30 days later make a decision. So, I mean, that doesn't stop that.
To be clear, on the first couple of pages of the application, I found a word I'd never heard of: irrepealable. Like, it cannot be repealed. So sure enough, you may see later in the process an environmental assessment that raises flags, raises concerns. It's too late. What you do is, according to the documents that were shared on this application, to move forward with this IRB approval process means that you cannot repeal this. A future version of the commissioners can't go back, review an assessment, and say they made a bad decision. So certainly, to me, that's a conversation that would warrant, like, make you consider slowing down.
Now, I'll have to look at that. But like I said, if that was the potential, what would be the purpose of having clawbacks in there, right? If you can't hold the company that like we're saying accountable, why would we build in clawbacks? I don't understand. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're saying that we can't repeal
holding
it.
Holding a company accountable and clawbacks on the financial investment is different than repealing the issuance of the bonds in the
that
first
is
place.
Part. But that is part of the process. And that is part of what allows it, is if this company fails, if they don't do certain things, the bonds can be repealed, and then they pay taxes for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but what about something like what we were talking about here, or they were, the environment, let's say the environmental impact statement comes back, and it's a horror. Can you say, no, we're...
Yes, that's a combination of working with the New Mexico Environmental Department to determine that it's going to be more of a problem than what they can manage. And at that point, it's their recommendation would be to cancel, and then we can do that because they have to approve the permits as well for the power plant, not us.
But that doesn't mean you can cancel the bonds.
No, but if anything in this project fails at some point in time or they pull out, then the bonds get canceled, which, by the way, we don't lose any money on that because it's not our money. And the other thing is they end up having to go back and pay us all the taxes that we deferred.
But
so if they go down 25 years down the road and something, and they can't finish the project for whatever reason, or they've been violated something, then they have to shut the plant down.
Bankrupt,
we get the money back.
Are you getting those taxes? Posting a bond?
With these companies going bankrupt is probably not going to happen, but it could. Because they are public companies.
Borderplex Digital is not.
Are they
anything.
Public company?
It's not a public company.
It's nothing.
It's a privately held company.
I don't think it is a public company.
And I think, you know, I think when... Oh, sorry.
They don't have any money.
Stack is private. Stack is private. The other two...
They're a contractor. The agreeing company.
Okay.
Interplex Digital is the company, and they just put in a company called Yucca.
Yeah, they're a startup company.
They have a terrible environmental assessment, and they could be wildly successful. Like, they could be making all their money, paying their measly $300 million in a PILT, and we will have degradation on a scale we can't imagine, and you can't repeal that.
We're assuming about what they're going to drink.
And I think what we're saying is we're assuming that then even with this environmental analysis that is horrible, that then we and the state and everybody is going to give them a permit to operate?
No.
I you know what I mean? Like I said, that's the part that we're talking again. Like I said at the beginning, we're talking step one here, and a lot of this stuff comes in at step seven when we're talking permitting. But I think going back to the representative's concern is if there's an environmental disaster or something of that nature, then you know that then it becomes incumbent on the county to then come back and hold them accountable based off of any laws that we have within the state.
I mean, we
talked the gas pipeline leak that happened down in the Chamberino area, and you know we have active litigation as well as the state with Kinder Morgan because of that.
And that happened 8 years ago, but we were all over that. So this is the same thing.
Just to clarify, our concern is that you would move forward on a vote without reviewing an environmental assessment.
Yes.
We do have a caller, too. So, good morning, caller.
Good morning. So, if this weren't so serious, like so many things going on in the world, it would be absurd. I'm actually laughing listening to our commissioners try to defend the comments, which seem very reasonable. So you're willing to trust that there's going to be 2,500 jobs and then 750, which I've heard, I mean, who knows, right? But you're also saying, well, if there's an environmental disaster and thousands of people are hurt or sickened or die, well, we'll just take care of it then. I mean, I just ask the county commissioners, listen to this again. Ask someone you trust to listen to it with you, because I think you've checked your brains. I am just like flabbergasted. Where is the critical thinking? Where is the thoughtful thinking? The rush, it's like you've drunk the Kool-Aid. This is going to do what? Save our area? I'm flabbergasted. I am flabbergasted. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
By the way, thank you for your comment. That was great.
Do you want to respond to it or no, move on? Okay.
That's it. That's a great comment.
I guess I still think, you know, sorry to be a climate change freak. If you were putting out, you know, the amount of toxic fuels that El Paso Electric puts out, greenhouse gases that El Paso Electric puts out serving El Paso, which is kind of a big city, and us and the whole area, if that were suddenly going to be coming out, that is an environmental disaster right there. Or have you really balanced the 2,500 construction jobs, which is a mixed bag, having some jobs briefly, and then you got to deal with people who are there and don't have jobs anymore, or, you know, houses that are vacant that they were living in, whatever. The experience with other things like this has generally been that there aren't as many jobs as promised, and that they are lower, you know, maintenance type things, security type things, that the more professional stuff is done elsewhere. Your people say this is different, and it may be, so I don't know about that, but
I will say this. I think we look at when the ETA was written back in 2019, there was a different sense of our power needs across the country, I think, and even now, than what it is. We've seen, obviously, of course, the thing we're talking about, data centers is a reason why we see an increase in load. The retirement of coal has required us to figure out and have an increased capacity. And the third one, is also the increase in EVs as we've continued to push that. And, you know, they need to be charged. And so all of these things have caused the need for an increase in load. I think back in the 2019-2020, we were pretty steady. And so it's just a different, as we look at the power needs, it's a different reality. And so I think as we continue, like I said, I think we go back and look at it. When you look at your I know you're going back to CO2, but when you look at air quality, CO2 is not a measure of air quality. And that's the thing we talk about in the southern part of the county when we look at environmental justice and such, and I know there's a lot of talk about that, but that's one of it is we know it's a non-attainment zone, but CO2 is not specifically that. I'm not trying to dismiss it. I'm just saying that you're worried about all this, and I think when we look at air quality, this is something that would be managed by the NMED air permit.
We've got another caller on the line. Let's go ahead and jump on in, caller.
Okay, very good. Yes, I am very interested in discussion this morning. You probably recognize my voice.
I do. We have to be very brief, by the way, because we have another segment coming on.
Okay,
so
the environmental assessment has to be done, full stop. And it doesn't matter if your lawyers and so forth tell you it isn't necessary. It is necessary every time you do projects, especially big projects like this. And air quality includes carbon dioxide. definitely includes carbon dioxide. Where do you get the idea it doesn't anymore? Because that's causing climate change. And then, one last word, what if in the process, in the end here, this company doesn't work out and it isn't going to be happening, and you want to have a clawback and it goes bankrupt? You don't have any money to claw back then, don't you? I may be wrong, but explained. Thank you.
Thank you, Gil. We have another segment to get to pretty soon. What I was thinking about doing was asking everybody to, take a half minute and just a couple of sentences, say whatever you want to say last about this.
Could I add?
Yeah,
start with Vince.
Right. Yeah, there are plans to go carbon neutral. I don't see how you can do it. Because, first of all, we don't have hydropower. Solar requires not as much as Bob was talking about, but you can't level it out. You got 3 days of clouds or something. You've got the winter. Batteries will not carry you. A typical economical battery installation will cover 8 to 12 hours. And then wind, we're in the wrong place. So you're going to have backup generators. Carbon offsets by planting trees somewhere has been proven not to work. What are you going to do about it?
Thank you. As my wrap, I want to talk a second about IRBs again. When I first heard of this, I assumed the $300 million was annually, because on a project this big, that's the kind of consideration that would be equitable for our community. Also, when you hear round numbers like $350 million, how cute, that tells me someone just made them up. There wasn't analysis, there wasn't an understanding of real and local needs and how to meet them. And finally, again, this implicates both county and state dollars. How IRBs work is that you transfer title to the county. So the county will own all the infrastructure. But to get to $165 billion, everyone I talk to says that must include all the real property, all the equipment inside. So that also means that when the county owns that, you won't be taxed. So when you look at the GRT that would be lost separate than your 50-50 share, the GRT going to the state on this is probably close to $10 billion that we're just giving away to, out of desperation and a rush, get these gigantic companies here.
On Monday, we were given in the packet for the agenda page after page after page of dense legal material that covers the memorandum of understanding and contract that govern this whole process. We have no time to read, digest, comment, suggest, make changes. On Friday, they vote up or down to approve it or not. We cannot do that. That's a complete disrespect on the community. The second thing is, Shannon answered me in an email on this hurry up thing. He said, this is our only chance. If we don't take this, nobody else will come. There are 10 companies standing in line outside Phoenix right now trying to get in. Companies are being turned down around the country. If we put out our open for business sign, we'll get a lot of applicants.
Tucson just turned one down.
Right.
I would like to go back to the how we're going to power this thing. And really, solar plus battery, it's very difficult to supply this thing 100% of the time with solar plus battery. It is not difficult nor expensive to primarily power it with solar plus battery and rely on natural gas for backup only. And that's what I think we need to do. I think it's very simple to write it into a commitment that the company needs to satisfy the Energy Transition Act percentages for renewable power without using the carve-outs that define gas energy as zero carbon.
Manny.
Yeah, a couple of things. I think, you know, Bob says they're waiting outside, lining up outside Phoenix. APS, Arizona Public Service, and TEP have already committed and purchased shares off of the new gas lines being out there. They're committing to build 20 gigawatts of new generation in that area to power that. And so
Users to pay for it.
So absolutely, and that's why this company is building their own generating source to prevent that, and the ratepayers are not going to pay for it. And I agree. I appreciate. I know we're running out of time here, but I appreciate all the input we received today, all the input from our constituents. I do encourage them to take a look at doniana.gov. Go to the agenda. You can find that information, our agenda there. You can see our meeting. Either join us Friday 9 a.m. at the commission chambers or on YouTube.
Shannon.
Thank you, Peter. And I'd like to say thank you for everyone here at the table for, you know, joining us today, and also to our listeners, because I think that this is an important topic, an important event in the county. Bob, yes, you're right. I sent that letter. You know, there's a lot of discussion about people. There's a lot of discussion about how we're growing the businesses here in the county. And if you look at the Border Industrial Association, you know, they've been trying to attract businesses now for over 30 years. And they struggle. Trust me, they really do struggle to get companies here in the state because we don't have a reputation as being business friendly. Okay? That's fact. And if you look at the industrial park for Las Cruces out at the airport, how many tenants do we have out there? How successful are they being actually attracting companies here? And when you look at other parts of the state, you know, there's a couple places where we're having some businesses. But when I compare ourselves to Texas, Arizona, and Colorado, yes, they have more problems than we do, but they also have better quality of life for the citizens because companies are coming. I'm not sure that we may have 4 or 5 or 20 companies standing in line to come to New Mexico if this one doesn't happen, to want to do the same thing. But you know what? They're not knocking on our doors right now. So, you know, we have to stop and think, what does this mean, and what are the things that we can hold them to? We want to hold them accountable, and that's why we're putting in an addendum into the IRB to actually codify some of the things that we are going to hold them accountable for. And of course, I'd like to take 6 months to do this, but I can tell you the opportunity is not, the window is not going to be open that long.
Well, thank you all for being here. Appreciate your, you know, expertise and your patience, and particularly you guys, county commissioners, taking all the flack.
Both ways.
And before we move on, I also want to say, I'm a complete hypocrite in the sense that I'm advocating using a lot less energy and doing a lot less of this stuff, but I'm on GPT chat looking it up all the time.
Stuff up all the time.
And if I can't curb that habit, I should stop yammering at you guys.